Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 416. Just nailing in that 9:10 start for you guys. We're working with Missy Gannon, who's going to be joining us in just a few moments. Internet hasn't fully developed in Iowa yet, so
they're working on pulling those cables.
They are, no. But that was a little bit of the reason for the delay, but thank you guys for your patience. Of course, we're here. It's Tuesday night, so that means it's Smashbox time. And in fact, I think we're not even going to try and delay this anymore.
No, we've got the champ. Get right to it. We're about to play an interview with Missy Gannon. If it's got some audio issues in it, and if you want to skip ahead about 30 minutes and skip all the Missy Gannon audio stuff, please go ahead and do that. Catch us on the flip side of that.
Let's have her now, Missy Gannon. Hey, Missy, how are you doing?
Hello, how are you? Apologize for the internet problems.
All good.
It's okay.
We're going to do our best, and we'll let the world know that, of course, we'd love to have you for the duration as much as we can, but if it gets a little too choppy or unbearable for you, we'll be okay with cutting you loose. Hopefully, we don't have to. So, first of all, yeah, it's a really sweet, kind gesture, but you didn't have to go get your hair all done up for us tonight. I mean, that's... You're doing some work over there in Des Moines, aren't you?
It looks nice.
Thank you. Yeah, shorter than usual, but they've had this really cool setup at the challenge. A local barber and hairdresser came out to sort of give us a nice free service for all of us, ragging disc golf pro professionals. So yeah, it's been really cool, and I just kind of let her whatever she wants, as long as it still put it in a little bit of a ponytail and wear a hat, then I was happy with whatever she gave me. So yeah, I love it. It came out great.
Yes, certainly. And I saw your post earlier today. Normally we don't go to something as superficial as looks and outfits, but right. I saw your post today and you said that you think there's going to be a number of disc golfers that might get a little cleaned up here this weekend. Now, was that the case last weekend? Because behind the fly mart, this sounds funny, I realize, but at the end of a cul-de-sac, behind the fly mart, there was somebody giving haircuts, like, almost out in a field. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on here, but maybe this is something new. Is there any correlation?
Yeah, apparently there was also the same setup at Ledgestone, but I had already made the appointment for Des Moines, so I was like, let them take care of me. But yeah, apparently same thing at Ledgestone.
All right. So next time you need a haircut, just go to a fly mart, find the a field at the end of the cul-de-sac, and hopefully there's somebody there with a stool and some clippers, and you get yourself a haircut.
You should have done that, Miller.
Don't worry about me. All right, Missy. So congratulations taking down such an incredible event, a 4-round event on two very different courses that challenge so many different facets of your game. This has to feel like such a well-rounded win, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like if you're gonna call yourself one of the best in the world, this is one of those events that you're able to kind of showcase every aspect of your game. And yeah, it's one event that I felt like I could always win, but never quite got it done. And even back in 2018, when I first joined the tour, Ledgestone was the first lead card I had ever made. I don't know. I guess there's a little bit of history there for me. And it's always been one that I would always look forward to trying my best at. And I felt like it was within reach. And so to finally do it was, a really special one to take down.
Well, and we talk about things like flow state and in the zone and blacking out, all sorts of, you know, different ways that people describe when they're, you know, really feeling it on the course. Would you use any of those phrases? Did you get into that mindset or mentality, or was your mind maybe even elsewhere as you were, closing out the last couple of rounds even?
You know, I think it was closer to almost what I imagine. You know, I always remember hearing like Paige and Katrina and people talking about like what it felt like to battle with the on their card. And I think that final round, especially, I had no idea really what we were scoring on each hole. I just knew how many I was losing or how many I was gaining. And that was pretty much it. You know what I'm saying? So like, it was a weird feeling. I remember walking from hole five to holding, like I was almost thinking like I was kind of shooting myself out of it. And I'm talking about that after hole five, like how could I be thinking like that so early on? But, you know, I had already given up a few strokes to all of my card mates at that point. And I think it was pretty through the best drive of the whole group after kind of recuperating, realizing like, what are you doing? You know, count yourself out yet. You're on the box right now, but you're about to throw, one of the best drives. And I ended up doing that and actually getting the only birdie on that hole out of my car. So I think the turning point, feeling like maybe I had to doubt myself a little to be able to push myself to, cut it out and start pushing and actually, get everything together and stop thinking those negative thoughts, I guess.
You know, and it's interesting you say that as you talk about whether it's hole five or hole six or really almost anywhere on that course, because significant stroke swings, you know, you think about a lot of holes where you're like, okay, somebody might two, somebody might three, you know, we might see a stroke or two, or maybe an OB, you know, gives a two stroke swing, but we've seen it. Unfortunately, there could be a five stroke swing on a hole out on that course. It could be a par four and you could literally see a five stroke swing. So does that intensify the feelings knowing like, man, this thing isn't over till it's over?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially I feel like early on, it was a couple of two stroke swings that had happened, whether they were not in my favor or then in my favor. It was really kind of hard to keep track in a way. It was, I felt like everybody was gaining or giving on almost every other hole or something like that. And, there was even one point towards the end of the round where I really had no idea if it was Kristen or if it was Paige, or, you know, all of a sudden I'm hearing about, you know, and Lisa on charge. So it was confusing and really kind of hard to keep track of. But luckily, you know, I have Tom there to sort of manage that part of it. There was one point where I was like, am I worried about Paige right now? And he kind of looked at me almost like confused because it was like not even Paige at that point. It was Kristen and it was Owen and Lisa, you know, Paige wasn't even in the conversation at that point, but I had no idea who I was worried about. So it was crazy. It was really
well, it looks like, okay. Yeah. You were saying it was crazy because you were unsure. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen a little more frequently, or I know they've always been out there, but I feel like really this weekend they're more prevalent than ever, is seeing the on course leaderboards as well being huffed around, I'll say. I mean, that's no easy task. So, do you ever glance at that? Because that shows the score. I know everybody talks about whether they look on their phone or not, but then there's a leaderboard that's right there in front of you. And I know I looked at Paige as she was staring at it at one point. Do you find yourself glancing at it, or do you purposely try not to look at that either?
I've found myself looking at it more than I had ever looked at it before, because like I said, I was so confused who exactly I was really with at any point in the event. You know, I knew it was mostly Paige during the first like front nine or so, but then all of a sudden it really wasn't her anymore. And it was Kristen I was having to worry about. So I looked at that about a handful of times, which is a handful of times more than I ever look at it any other round. I had been lead card battling, so yeah, it was a lot.
Fair or not, when we talk about quality of FPO wins, the very first thing that gets mentioned is, well, is Kristen there? Is Evelina there? Is Henna there? You know, in addition to all of our top rated FPO competitors, does this one feel as tough as any other win that you could think of? Really just Henna and Evelina aren't there, and who knows how they would play, of course, but is this as tough of a field as you could expect to go up against?
I would say so. I mean, obviously I feel like Evelina, you know, had been playing really well up until Europe, and obviously she sort of got out of that early really coming really charging, and I think getting her game back to where we all pretty much I think this maybe her kind of, you know, Evelina was really gaining that momentum coming to the year. But other than that, I think, yeah, the field couldn't have been really much more, much stronger, given that, you know, Kristen had made her comeback. Maybe still not 100%. We've all heard her, you know, talk about how she is cleared to play and all, but she's obviously still battling that that elbow injury. So, but other than that, yeah, I mean, it's one of the largest fields that we have at Ledgestone. I couldn't imagine. I think so far it's been one of the strongest fields that I've had, that I've won against my wins, maybe besides the Pro Tour Championship, but that's a hard one to sort of compare to.
Yeah,
well, you have an uncanny knack to win the biggest ones with the most money. You've got Throw Pink. You've got the Pro Tour Championship, and now Ledgestone. Mm-hmm. Are there three bigger payouts?
Yeah,
That's not a bad habit to get into.
Right, and even thinking about Des Moines Challenge at the time last year, I think it was one of the highest FPO. Paychecks at the time. So now that's sort of become standard, and if not more, but yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, that's okay with me, I suppose.
Yeah.
You're only going to win a few of them, make them the big ones.
Right.
Tom Hanks, show me the money. I don't know. I'm just thinking you're waiting for those huge checks to show up, and then you're like, all right, I'm just gonna slide into the on top of the podium on this one. I love it.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of which, let's talk just briefly about the, you know, whether you call it momentum or just nothing more than a coincidence that you're now in Des Moines. Last year, you, of course, won Des Moines. At the time, that was your biggest victory to date. Then you went on to win Throw Pink as well. But at the time, that was your biggest victory to date. And now, man, talk about riding these feels, the vibes, whatever the kids say these days, as you're rolling back into Des Moines and you've got a title to defend.
Yeah. 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 You know, coming here was, you know, honestly, to be really honest, it felt even more of like a, you know, winning Ledgestone already felt like a weight kind of lifted off my shoulders, because there obviously were a lot of high expectations coming into the season in general. And, you know, I've had a relatively successful season, in my opinion, but I I finally have secured at least one Elite Series. It sort of feels like a little bit less pressure, a little bit of pressure lifted at least. So coming into Des Moines, having one Ledgestone right for sort of lifts the pressure off of defending my title at Des Moines in a way. It's really hard to go and defend your title year after year. I mean, even the best in our sport have a hard time doing that, especially nowadays. So, you know, I'm not really giving too much thought into it. Would I love to win Des Moines championships? Of course. Would I love to go back to back and win, you know, last year and then this year? Yes, of course. But I do understand and realize that that's still really hard to do. And but yeah, coming back to this course, I have a lot of good feels, it's really cool to meet again and kind of see the progression of my personal play, and, you know, maybe what I wish I could have done last year, even though it did end up working out in my favor. You know, there were a few things that I was like, man, I wish I could have played this hole better or whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of feelings going on, but it's certainly not like I have to earn this event, although I am trying to do that.
Yeah. And to follow all that up, I think about the course you play at Sunset, very scorable, a tad maybe on the shorter side, but very scorable and what feels like a little bit shorter. Then you go to Northwood, totally opposite feel, all these tight lines, and clearly you can score on that course, but very lots of opportunity for any kind of scores there. Now, you have those two courses dialed in. You take down the victory, and now compare and contrast that to what you're going to go see at Pickard. You know, if somebody maybe isn't familiar with the Des Moines Challenge or what that course offers, set that up and kind of compare to what the courses you just left.
Yeah, it's you know what it. Other than the fact that Sunset is on a traditional golf course, it has very similar feeling to it in the sense that it's got rolling, you know, greens. There's water, there's downhill shots, there's, you know, uphill shots, there's left bending shots, right bending shots. It just feels like you're on this big selling property that has beautiful hills and big trees and rough, but, you know, very fair fairways and extremely manicured. It's just a really beautiful place to play, and pretty much has it all. It has the wide shots. It has the technical tighter line. Like I said, it has right turning fairways, left turning fairways. It's a really beautiful combination of everything you could really ask for in a disc golf. I haven't heard really many people not liking Pickard Park. I think it has so much variety in it, and it really doesn't cater to any one particular player. I think it's just a place that people really look forward to coming back to. And I think especially after last year, having it come back on tour, and then, you know, people, I think, really were excited to come back to Pickard Park this year. And it's a really pretty property and has a lot of really good qualities to it.
If and I'm excited for the world to see it, because as you said, it is so widely revered as just a great course for so many reasons, most of which you just explained. So mm-hmm. How about on a personal level, who is Missy Gannon here, August 16th, compared to Missy Gannon of August 16th in 2021? What's the difference besides all the biggest paychecks that you're stealing away from the rest of the division?
You're earning
is a better word. Yes. You're nabbing them away from all of them. But, what's the difference in you or your game a year later?
I think what was funny about last year is that I really didn't feel about chances here at Des Moines Challenge. I think I remember playing the practice rounds, and I remember thinking, like, man, there are so many blind baskets, and what are they doing here? And, I still liked playing the course, but I certainly didn't feel extremely confident about my abilities and how they matched up the course. I don't know what it was specifically, but just a little bit of, like, lack of self-confidence or something. I'm not really sure, but I certainly, it's also part of never played hard. It's new to me, so maybe just a little bit unsure about my game. I'm not really sure what it was last year, but I think going into this year, not only do I have the confidence of being able to win on this track, but also I think I just have a lot more confidence in my shots and my shot selection and my disc. I pretty much feel like so many of the discs that I have in my bag right now, I have now had in the bag for, roughly 2 to 3 years, especially some of my go-tos. So that just overall helps so much, regardless of the course that you're playing. I have a better grasp on my discs and my abilities with those discs, and of course just ability to win on this course, even with the lack of self-confidence maybe that I had last year. So I'm really excited. Certainly I've played one practice round so far this morning, and there I surprised myself with some of the things that I maybe couldn't do last year. I found myself being able to do, whether it was being able to birdie hole 18, I think is a big one. I felt like I could not at all birdie it last year. And obviously that's not a very good thing to not be able to birdie the last hole of the tournament when, that very well could come down to the last hole. You got to be able to score on it. So to be able to do that is just really cool to see the progress in my game.
So I won't let you cop out with the final putt. Not that I know you would, but favorite shot that you recall from last year's Des Moines Challenge when you took it down. Is there a shot that really comes to mind, whether you impressed yourself, whether it was a just get out of jail, maybe it was a 50 footer to save bogey, I don't know, but
the putt on 18 to close it out, I mean come on,
that's what I just said, that's disqualified. You can't use that one, that's the
come
obvious
on.
So outside of the final putt, what's the shot you remember the most from last year?
Well, I think I didn't give it enough credit for how difficult the shot actually is. Because I remember rewatching the coverage for the Disc Golf Network, a Wednesday watch or something like that. And Paige had joined me to watch my final round at Des Moines. And I think I had mentioned how hole 11, which for us probably a little bit easy, but that's what I said in the coverage. And she kind of corrected me and said, well, it's easy if you pipe your drive straight down the fairway, but if you're off the fairway at all, which is easier to do, I maybe gave it credit for, then you're scrambling for par. So it is a shorter par four. They did actually shorten the basket a little bit last year. The shorter par four, get a dead straight shot, and still get a lot of distance off the tee to have a more comfortable second shot to what was then a blind basket. And I think I birdied it both rounds that we ended up playing. And something like that, where I didn't necessarily give it enough credit, but it definitely gave other people some troubles. So my tee shot on hole 11 might be one of them. It's hard to remember.
No, fair enough. I can really appreciate, and I love the fact that it was through Paige and her version of what she recalled and how she interpreted it, and you guys watching, and maybe that's true. A shot you take for granted, you're like, oh yeah, I threw a good shot. You never thought about it, but then when you realize, 60% of the field's off the fairway, and scrambled hard to walk away with a par or a bogey or whatever the case is, again, maybe you almost take that for granted, and you don't realize, oh damn, that was a pretty good shot, and I made the hole easy where most people didn't. So I can certainly appreciate that. You just mentioned a short, slightly shortened pin. Any other significant changes that jumped out at you from last year to this year's FPO configuration?
Yeah, well, there are two completely new holes. That's hole 3 and hole 13. So both are very technical. Both are par 3s. I think hole 3 is going to be very difficult. It's slightly downhill through the woods, a lot of trees, a pretty specific hit. Long, very straight forehand, sort of has like a gentle, has like a gentle fade, but it still has to like get pretty far out of a gap. I'm curious what a lot of people are going to do on it. I personally am going to, throw a backhand and kind of just hope that I, don't ricochet too far off into the woods. I still fair away, but it's definitely a very specific line. I see par being a very good score on hole, and then hole 13 is a downhill hole as well. Also, you have to hit a pretty tight gap if you want to just shoot the straight shot. But there are other options potentially over the top, and then down into the basket's tucked into the woods and sort of off to the right. So again, kind of a very specific shot, and that one I being playing a little bit, being not as hard as hole 3. And then just a couple of other just slight changes. I think hole 4, it's no longer a par 4, it's the par 3, where last year we were able to kind of pitch to a landing zone and then over the water. But there is the big pond all on the right side. And now it's more like the MPO situation where you're sort of deciding how aggressive you want to get and whether or not that bird is something that you want to, you know, push for and how to challenge the water to get there. I think it says that the clock's in at like 4:30, I want to say, but pretty downhill. And then, yeah, I think on hole 11 might be the last change that I can think of, that the basket is no longer blind. It's kind of it's a little closer and on the hillside, so possibly making that. I feel like it's maybe more so for the MPO pad, because they were shooting from, they have like a very severe dog leg down the hill, and I think a lot of people were like really just struggling on that hole. A lot of people were trying to cut the corner and kind of going into the rough. So maybe it's more for the MPO, but it just plays a bit less and possibly makes that approach shot a little bit more touchy, I guess. But I think that's pretty much it. As far as I can remember, I think everything else is pretty much the same otherwise.
Okay. Well,
oh, and hole one is a shorter tee pit as well. So possibly a little bit more scoreable as of a starting hole for us.
Awesome. I was going to follow that up is, you know, last year was the first year that we saw this as a pro tour event. Clearly the Des Moines area and club well-versed in running, you know, top-notch, you know, high caliber events, but also mm-hmm. great to see that even in its, you know, right away in its second year, probably some feedback, some statistics, you know, all sorts of things play into that. And then for them mm-hmm. to, you know, directly react and then make these changes, which everyone would hope and assume they're all for going to be for the better, is mm-hmm. just a testament to, you know, the pro tour and high level golf week in and week out and what's happening on the tour. And I think we can all applaud that.
Yeah, I mean, the course looks great. I think I know a few players that didn't play last year that are out here this year. And even the feedback that I have either, you know, seen on social media or whatever, you know, people seem to still really enjoy the course. Even seeing it for the first time, even though it is, you know, some last year, which particular players wouldn't necessarily know. So,
sure.
Yeah, still seems to be highly regarded and
works
to play it.
All right, and as we start to wrap up here, your signal continues to be a little bit challenged, although we can hear you, but we're going to probably wrap up so I was gonna say so your voice doesn't get choppy, but I guess that's on the internet. One of my questions though is relatively, and I know I'll put this in quotes, maybe air quotes, but relatively short commute from Ledgestone over to Des Moines this week, I feel like. Maybe expand on that. Talk about, you know, what that feels like to have, you know, this Midwestern jaunt, you know, down I-80 for the most part, right? Any issues? Yeah. What was travel like for you?
Smooth sailing. No issues, thankfully. So far, the entire year has been very smooth for us. I know other camper lifers and van lifers have had some vehicle issues. We have yet to encounter any of those. So, yeah, super quick. Checked into our campground. He gotten haircuts and practice round in. So, yeah, very, very easy. And I'm looking forward to getting another practice round in tomorrow morning.
All right. So with that, tell me, you get the fresh new haircut, safe, easy travels, checked in, practice round, more practice to come, winning the largest check of the year, going to defend a title. Tell me, how does life get any better for you, Missy?
It's pretty great right now. I remember what it was like when I first started touring, and I always think about that, and it always humbles me to remember, you know, how it all started. how difficult it had been, and, you know, just being able to sort of, you know, realize how much the hard work and the perseverance has paid off is, you know, I think just a testament to Tom just sticking it out and roughing it and, you know, really grinding, as we all always hear disc golfers talk. You know, I'm always humble, I'm always grateful, and I'm never going to stop pushing. So it's awesome, and I just love being, I love doing what we're doing, and you know, can't wait to see what else hopefully comes our way.
Yeah, and by R, you mean you and Tom. And Tom, another big birthday shout out. I know he got the full treatment at the end of the round earlier in the weekend.
Rooms.
Yeah, that. But he also had hundreds of people singing to him after the round was done, and rightfully so. So big, another big happy birthday to him as well. A great, what an incredible weekend all around, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Very, very happy. And yeah, just looking forward to the next one, and just hoping that we can continue to have fun out here and love what we're doing. And, you know, yeah, keep hopefully talking to you, because that means I'm doing good.
Yeah, well, you're welcome anytime. You don't have to win, but it may, if you finish fourth and then we have you, some people might think it's weird, but you are welcome anytime. All right, so as we cut you loose here officially, please, you know, get your plugs, your shout outs, your sponsor thanks, and then how anyone can support you in the ways that they could go about doing. So don't be shy about them. Share them with the world.
I mean, yeah, the best way to support me is through my sponsors. You know, everybody pretty much has something that helps support me, that that's why I represent them. So, you know, Discraft, you know, go to Discraft or pick up a Tour Series disc at your local retailer. Also, Grip Equipment, some of the best in the market. So definitely go check them out. Also, Whale Sacks, I know I heard people talking, you know, what's that thing that she holds in her hand and then, you know, throws on the ground every time she tees off? That's a whale sack. That's a clay bag that's handmade, you know, well-known business. And yeah, go check them out. I have some signature whale sacks on there. Ledgestone, of course, you know, my first year representing Ledgestone, and I get to take down their flagship event. So that's awesome. And they have a lot of my gear and discs on their website, shopledgestone.com. And then finally, Good Seltzer. They're a really small seltzer company. It is hard seltzer, but they support helping children with illnesses and terminal illnesses find rescue animals and support animals, specifically support dogs to help them. So they do really good things, and you can find good dog seltzer. They're mainly in the Northeast and in Florida right now, but they're hoping to expand. So yeah, Good Dog Seltzer, go support people. That's it. And Tom, as always, and all my friends and family.
Of course. Well,
throughout the entire season.
You certainly have an incredible support network, and I think the entire world knows that it's easy to support you and to get behind all the hard work and the energy and the effort and the presence that you put out there on the course, on and off the course. And yet again, we got to say congratulations on an awesome performance this weekend. And looking forward, I'll personally be in the booth. Johnny will be pressing buttons, but I'll be in the booth in Bend alongside Valerie Jenkins calling the shots, and looking forward to you going out there and defending that title in Des Moines. So thanks for joining us tonight. Congrats yet again, and best of luck this upcoming weekend.
Thank you guys so much. Hopefully next time I join you, I'll have a better internet connection, but I'll be back.
next week after you win Des Moines again, come back next week from a better internet spot.
Yeah, you'll probably own your own cell tower by then with all the checks you keep cashing.
For sure.
All right. We appreciate you. Take care. Good night.
Thanks a lot,
bye.
Missy.
See ya.
Missy Gannon, for whether you could or couldn't hear her.
Yes, thank you to Missy, and thank you to everyone. We understand that was probably a little bit choppy for some of you. I've got one bad ear, and if I can make out what she's saying, then I feel like most of you should be able to as well, as although it might be a little bit stressful on the ear.
Yeah, I want to do something really quick. We're just going to, what time is it now?
9:48 Central.
So we've been on for 30 minutes, we're about to play an interview with Missy Gannon. If it's got some audio issues in it, and if you want to skip ahead about 30 minutes and skip all the Missy Gannon audio stuff, please go ahead and do that. Catch us on the flip side of that. I'm going to take that and push it into the front of the show before so, and then we'll be able to people will skip through it if they don't want to hear it, because some people don't like it. I get really frustrated when I listen to a podcast with bad audio in general. I'll tend to skip it or burn through interviews like that. So I'll take that little clip, I'll move it to before, and we'll be good to go.
Wow, man. Producing, live, directing, and
I do it all,
cutting and editing, all these things, all these buttons you press.
Car repair tomorrow, I hope too.
Ray says, Johnny with next level editing skills. I don't know if it's next level when you tell everybody what you're doing. But
no, that's even more. That's like third next level.
Yes. Oh, you're playing like 4D chess.
I am. That's what I'm doing.
Has anybody ever accused you of being too smart?
Too smart for my own good.
Okay, but not too smart.
Probably not.
Okay. Just wondering. All right.
I don't know.
All right. So since we are talking all things Ledgestone, as I momentarily in talking to Missy was also seeing that she is now sitting, maybe she was there beforehand, I don't know for sure, but she is sitting in fifth in the Disc Golf Pro Tour sets. Hey, Johnny, I do have a great idea.
Next level stuff. What's up, Ter?
Oh, my gosh. So to all my friends out there at UDisc, I just thought of this moments ago.
Have the Nico arrows
next to the standings. And I'm sure you're going to tell me there's some really smart reason why that can't happen, but it would be kind of cool if it did. And I'm sure it would maybe make more confusion or not for people. I don't know. There's probably a key or something you could reference. But yeah, in looking at the stats, I see, of course, all of our qualified players and where all the stats range from 100 or from first to 194th on the FPO side. It'd be really cool next to the name on the Disc Golf Pro Tour standings page on UDisc, just have a little arrow, and that would imply where they went up or down since the previous event.
If we call them Nico arrows now, is that because someone got suspended? I'm not sure. Ouch.
I don't think we want to go there.
Honestly, and I'm sure this is something that's in UDisc's future at some point, I would love to see almost like a time slider on something like this, so I can literally go back and almost
see where they were.
So if I go back like, hey, week one, you can see everybody kind of move around and the Nico arrows change based on where it is. Again, that's some next level stuff, but
yeah,
I'm not smart enough to do that. I don't know web stuff that way.
And I am not about to call you out, UDisc, but I'm calling you out.
We're calling them out.
Yes, we are.
I can't believe you,
Josh,
don't have... Yeah.
You two brainiacs.
They'll probably have it by the end of the show now.
Yeah. And real quick, and it's a very fair question, and so we will touch on it quickly. Carolina Chainbanger asks, why are they called Nico arrows? And the story to that is that a few years ago, at the Waco Annual Charity Open, Nico LoCastro had missed his tee time. He had showed up late to his round. And in doing so... he showed up, and then he received par plus four, I believe was the penalty at the time, for a couple of holes. But then he started birdieing everything. I don't have the time to go look in when and where this was, which round and what year. I'm going to guess like 2017. Yeah. But anyway, 16 or 17. Oh, not the first year, probably.
Might have been 18.
Maybe. Anyway, one of those years, somebody smarter than me can go research that. And... when he showed up, I feel like he started just birdieing like left and right. And so you saw him with all these penalty strokes, and was pushed way at the bottom, but then you saw him shooting up the leaderboard and continuing to climb. Now, clearly, he had dug himself quite the hole, taking the penalty strokes initially, but then that was the conversation of like, well, we want to see how much did he move in the day. You know, where did he start? How high did he climb? And then next thing you know, UDisc had created these arrows, or maybe they had them in the works. But now you see arrows next to everyone's name during a live event. And that's showing the positions in which they've moved up or down or not, if there's no arrow there. And so I feel like the impetus to the whole conversation about watching somebody move and wanting to know how many spots they had either gained or lost came as maybe a need, a direct result to fulfill that need of that Nico conversation. So nothing nefarious or negative in any capacity. In fact, it was quite a compliment in the sense that we were watching him shoot up this leaderboard, and making up the ground after showing up and taking those bogey strokes or those over par strokes. So, yeah, that's where the phrase Nico arrows comes from.
That is where it comes from.
So, okay. Anyway, so let's continue with FPO action and talk about all the people that Missy did beat, which was everybody. She beat them all.
Yeah. She beat Owen. She beat Lisa Fakus. She beat Kristen Tatar. Paige Pierce. Alexis Mondejano. Katrina Allen. Madison Walker. Katie Tate. Alan Hanley. Sarah Holcomb. Those are your top 10 women that she beat.
Read all. I want you to read every other woman.
Everyone. Okay.
Other 40. I'm kidding.
Alex Benson. Maria. Everybody. She beat everybody. Congratulations. But those are your top 10 finishers. Owen continues to impress. She was on a quite literally at one point they got a bender earlier in the week. It was Owen's birthday as well. Someone said she showed up to the press conference and people had been buying her drinks beforehand. And
nothing wrong with a little soda.
Nothing wrong with a little soda before the press conference. But
I'm mad that I was in another part of the pub and eatery. Bar and grill, whatever, Mashies. I was in another part of it as the press conference was taking place. Mm-hmm. So other than a few chuckles from time to time from a distance, I didn't hear anything that was being said at the press conference. But it sounds as if I should have made my way over to listen to Owen during that presser.
Oh, that's
she had a good time.
That's what Gary had
was
said.
Was having a good time.
She was having
and
a
continued
pretty good time.
To have a good time.
Yeah. And Owen Scoggins was on a heater at the end of that final round. She bogeyed the second hole and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 birdies in the next like 16, only to get stuck on hole 18 with a double. Ultimately, the double ended up not mattering because she wasn't be able to catch Missy no matter what she did. Even if she birdied that hole, she is still she's still 3 strokes behind Missy. So ultimately, it didn't matter. But you could tell Owen was frustrated at the very end of the round. Only because of that. And then she still had a great smile and a bow at the end of the round or something like that. So she, went on to shoot a 5-under par. Lisa Fakus, same thing in the middle of the round. She was getting close. She was getting very close and then proceeded to go bogey, bogey, bogey to finish. It just, nobody was catching Missy. It didn't matter what any of these other women were shooting. Paige Pierce was the only one that had a chance, and she kind of ruined that halfway through the round when she took 3 straight bogeys on 5 through 7. After that point, it was just as long as Missy didn't implode, she was winning this event. And she proceeded, obviously, not to implode and play consistent Missy golf, which is what she does. So, congratulations to Missy Gannon again.
Well, and I'm just now realizing it was, in fact, a tie for third. And I'm going to dig mm-hmm. in just a little bit. Somebody can, I'm sure, correct me. I think that tie for third is partially significant for Kristen in that
she has not taken worse than third.
She's never finished off the podium in the U.S. No, she finished
this
fifth
year,
at Worlds.
This year. This year,
is easy to check, folks.
This year, she has not finished worse than third at an Elite Series or better in the U.S.
Okay, I'm trying to think of a graphic that I saw a few broadcasts ago, and thinking about just how dominant and how much she's been.
Because she took third at Las Vegas, and then she proceeded to take second. First or something? Like,
not quite, but yeah.
She's almost gotten better at Elite Series.
She's finished on the podium every single event this year that she's completed. She did have to withdraw from Toonie, but she has finished on the podium. And I'm going to go back to last year. Her fifth place finish at Worlds. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Her fifth place finish at Worlds was the only time she's finished outside of the top three in the last 3 years. I'm all the way back to 2019.
Was she even in the States in 2019 for DGPT events?
She finished fifth at the European Open in 2019. That's the only other time since 2019 to go along with the 2021 Worlds that she's finished fifth. And then the only other time before that was when she finished eighth at the PDGA World Championships in 2018. So, wow. I don't know how the stat lines work in Vegas, but to put Kristen Tatar outside of the top three is not a bright idea. Just, yeah, that's truly incredible. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I know it's so dumb that I'm walking down the fairway, keeping my eyes on the scores, and thinking to myself, man, if she finishes in the top three, she keeps that streak going. And I guess she probably doesn't even think about silly things like that.
She
does.
She might have that in the back of her
head. I know I was thinking that.
She had a little help.
So to see her tied to keep the streak alive is incredible.
Yeah, she had a little help from Paige Pierce, who unfortunately had a poor round. She shot plus three, which is the worst score in the top 10. Oh, I'm sorry. Sarah Holcomb had a worse score in the top 10. Sure. She took 10th. But that's what knocked that down. Although otherwise, she would have taken fourth. Because it was honestly up until the final hole when Paige took a bogey.
Yeah.
She would have been tied for second, which would have knocked everybody down.
Yeah.
Which would have knocked everybody else down. So Kristen got in there. Another phenomenal showing was Alexis Mondejano, who shot a course record 7 under. And we thought Owen Scoggins was going to come back and beat that almost right away, except she double bogeyed at the end to only go to 5. She could have, had she taken a par, she would have tied it. And birdie obviously would have beat that. But Alexis Mondejano, just a very consistent round, getting, you know, a clean scorecard with 7 birdies out there is such a feat. So congratulations to everybody. Let's talk about the men.
The silly men.
They're just going to rename this to the Ledgestone Waisaki Open. Back to back to back. 3 straight Ledgestone wins for Ricky. Kind of let some people get close at first. Corey Ellis was kind of knocking on the door. Because Ricky, 3 through 7, a bunch of pars. And then Ricky put his foot down on the competition and just decided to get a whole bunch of birdies. And nobody could keep up with him. Kind of ran away with it, as did just like Missy, actually. So he won by 4 strokes over Paul McBeth, who I swear every time we saw Paul he was having struggles.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go back and look at his scorecard, you're like, oh yeah, that guy shot a 6 down. Like
you think of a hole like hole 4 that comes to mind for me at least, and I'm over there watching him, and he has a putt from about 45 feet straight down the hill, a death putt, you know, that's definitely going to carry deep if you don't connect with something firmly. And it wasn't the prettiest putt he made all weekend, but he puts it in from 45 feet on this death putt. And you're like, oh, okay. And then you're like, oh, that was to save a par, though. So it's easy to immediately be thinking like, well, what's going on?
It felt like a lot of times we were cutting to Paul, he was struggling. Because, and I think that might just be the fact that Paul makes things look very easy, just as does Ricky. And so when he's on the chase card like that and you check in, it, Paul's struggling, let's show it. You know, that's kind of feels in the control room. You know, shoulda, woulda, couldas, but Paul had 5 penalty strokes that final round. Without those 5, Paul's in the lead. Yeah. But then again, maybe Ricky wouldn't have done what he did on 17 with a little,
I think
more
he
pressure.
Would have.
Because
that I have a whole theory on 17.
I mean, clearly Ricky blew past the putt, went OB, blew past the
hit
putt,
not on the leg.
Then, who?
I should share it with you. I almost for the first time in my life posted a video with zero editing straight to my YouTube channel. Ricky gets on the green on 17, which is clearly the toughest part of that hole.
Correct.
You get on the green on 17, and from there, you're like, okay, worst case scenario, par.
Yeah. It's always, you know, inside of 30 feet on that green.
So he gets there, and you see it very clearly on my recording that I'm just doing with my phone, and you probably could see it in some of the videos. But he's just about ready and lined up and ready to putt. And then all of a sudden, directly behind the basket with no other people around, one older lady kind of just starts walking directly behind the basket. And Ricky pulls back. He waits. He stands down. He stops his routine. He stops and waits for her. She gets pretty much still right in his sight line, gets her camera, her phone up, and is sitting there waiting for Ricky to putt. If you go back and check the tapes, Ricky misses the putt, doesn't touch an ounce of metal from inside 30, blows past it by 30 feet,
into the OB.
And it hits the lady's leg. And then he walks over there, and he's got a very easy comeback, relatively easy,
15 to 20 feet.
Putt, and he doesn't drop metal on that. You're crazy if you tell me somehow in the silliest minor way that all didn't work, Ricky.
Oh, it probably did. He probably, again, you put somebody on Ricky at that point, had it locked up.
Exactly.
You put someone on Ricky's heels. Maybe he's a little more focused. Maybe he takes another step off and says, excuse me, ma'am, can you move? Or whatever he decides to do. I'm not, you know, that's all woulda, shoulda, couldas. But very, very interesting. Yeah. I mean, we didn't.
Yeah. So
the funny thing is we didn't see this because I think we were off to the right on the broadcast. All I remember seeing is Ricky blow past it. I never saw the woman there.
Yeah. So I'm showing Johnny now. He's 2 feet above the basket.
Oh, it kind of hits her in the toe.
Hits her in the foot or whatever. And then he's got to walk over to her.
Mm-hmm.
She's just standing there. She's still got her phone up. And I'm not picking on the lady, but I know mentally that something's going on in Ricky's head. He goes and has to reclaim his putter after
he's going to walk right up to her. How awkward.
And then he comes back and he's got a very, very makeable putt. Mm-hmm. I don't even think he hits metal.
No, I don't think he does either. He just misses it. Yeah, he just he looked like an AM3 putting there for
again,
a second.
Again, he's got all the strokes in the world. It didn't matter. But if you said to Ricky Wysocki, hey, what are the odds you're going to give me that you're going to go bogey free today, but once you hit the island on 17, you're going to walk away with a double? I mean, seriously, of all the trouble and all of the things that can go wrong on the Eureka course, mm-hmm. for him to then 4-putt or 3-putt plus a penalty, I couldn't hold myself back. I was like, oh my gosh, I watched this all unfold right in front of me. So I didn't know what the live cameras showed or didn't show.
We didn't see, I don't believe we saw the woman because I think the angle we had it, she was probably cut off because you just don't expect Ricky to miss that or blow past it like he did. Like, sure, miss, hit high, fall, hit low, miss, not airball it past 30 feet. So, well, congratulations again, obviously to Ricky Wysocki who takes this down. Third place, the kid is, he might be the most consistent golfer on tour, Gannon Burr.
Okay.
He can't win an elite series, but to hell if he's not top 5 every single event. And I think, I don't know if he's going to, I don't want to say I think he's going to get one this year. I don't know if he will. He's going to get one soon, whether it's the end of this year, early next year. That kid is too good and too consistent not to get one. And I know we usually wait till our after show to do our picks, which we haven't done in years.
Yep, that's why we usually wait.
If you're not subscribed to Alden Harris's YouTube channel, You are missing, I think, the best disc golf content on the internet right now.
Wow. Better than way better than our show.
Better than our show. Better than any other podcast. Better than Shot by Shot stuff. Alden Harris is touring with Gannon Burr, and I believe Isaac Robinson, and I think one or two other guys pop in or out. Alden, I think, has some of the best YouTube content. Have you watched any of his stuff?
I haven't. In all fairness, I don't watch anyone.
No. It's hilarious. So. Like, you talk about how Silas Schultz has great content, I think, on Instagram and stuff. I love watching Alden Harris's stuff, and it's now my life goal to get on one of Alden Harris's YouTube.
Dang.
they do a fake interview at the end of, I think, every event. And so there's like the Mid-America Open one was hilarious because Gannon he's clearly self actualizing the time he took at the Mid-America Open, because the whole interview is him sitting next to Alden, who had just won, and Gannon talking about how he's going to penalize Alden from letting him take so long, for letting Gannon take so long. Okay. And all this stuff. It's great. Great, great content. And usually the videos are like 10 to 15 minutes. Well worth your time.
Huh.
So
I'm now going to have to go.
Definitely, please. Alden Harris's YouTube. Fourth place, Anthony Barella. He's kind of like, he's not as consistent as Gannon Burr, but he's got all the skills. And I think at one point that kid's going to be able to find focus and put it together, because if his scorecard was a roller coaster, it'd be scary. It'd be a scary roller coaster. It'd probably make me sick. Fifth place, Corey Ellis, having another good season. Just the guy's an amazing putter. Matty O tied for fifth. Kyle Klein, seventh. Chris Clemens and Randon Lada, eighth. And 10th place, Calvin Heimberg and Drew to the Gibson. Those are your MPO competitors that placed well.
Okay, and congrats to all of them. Also, of course, a few other conversation pieces. How far did Kevin Jones? He eagled 16.
I heard he eagled 16.
There you go.
Yeah, he was only like...
Okay. I'm not thinking of the same hole. I was thinking of 14. I apologize. I'm like, how far did you throw that in from? Okay, yeah, 16.
You hit a good roller. Good roller. We've seen Double G in years past go past the hole with a roller and then miss the comeback.
So,
amazing.
Real quick, a number of other big shout-outs and special shots. What did we see? GT Hancock with an ace. We saw... Erica Stinchcomb getting her first ace, I believe she said in 14 years. Was it 11 years on hole 14, or was it 14 years on hole 11?
I had heard it was her very first ace.
Yeah, it was on hole 11, so it was 14 years. So. Yeah, she's never had an ace of any kind. Not just a tournament ace.
Not a casual ace, not a second throw ace.
Nope. So congratulations to Erica Stinchcomb.
Not a brown ace, not a black ace, not a red ace, whatever other kind of aces there are, not a skip
you've
ace.
You've been maced more times than she's had aces.
I've never been maced.
Sure. Nobody here believes that.
I'm just thinking
nobody
how much that
believes
sting.
That.
Just thinking how much that would sting.
GT Hancock, who else had aces out there?
There were five of them,
I think, when it was all said and done. Also on the exact same hole 7 that GT Hancock got, Chandler Fry got an ace. Emerson Keith got an ace. Now, and that's where I was going with this. Albatross for Holland Hanley.
Phenomenal.
I was certainly concerned, and I even said this with Holland, and I said it immediately after it happened. I worried that too many people would immediately say, oh, that's a soft par 5. That's not a real par 5. That's not an Albatross. And she said she did see some of that.
I mean,
but thankfully, it did not dominate over the story of her getting it. Because I worried it would. Because let's face it, we got a lot of jerks out there.
Sure.
That just can't possibly be happy for things to happen.
Cool. Then almost any time someone throws one in for an albatross, that's a soft par. Philo's is a soft par then.
I don't think it has to be.
If you can get there, here's what I say. If you can get to a green in two shots and it's a par 5, then by definition, it is a soft par. And I'm not I'm not putting it down by any means. I think it's phenomenal. I think it is a par five.
It is.
But what I'm saying is that that's the argument that people have. Well, you can get there in two shots, so it shouldn't be a par five. Congratulations. That's what, you know, that's what it is.
No, well, when I looked, the last time I had looked, that hole averaged 4.92.
That sounds like a par five to me.
So that's a par five to me. Anyway, the point is, congrats to Holland.
She's phenomenal.
And then, you know, thinking about, because I think that fell maybe on the day after, maybe it was day two, but it had fallen on and come about after there were a bunch of aces. And then it was really an interesting perspective. I don't know if it was maybe Jeff Ducroix from the PDGA. It was somebody I was speaking with at the event and thought, wait a minute. How much more unique is an albatross? I mean, hole-in-ones happen every day, not only in disc golf, but even in golf.
Yeah.
All the time. And not to, again, take anything away from them, but if you're looking at legitimate uniqueness and rarities, the albatross is so much more rare.
Yeah. I mean, we get an albatross on tour about every 2 years at an Elite Series.
Is it that often?
About that. I mean, because we had double G's in Vegas 2 years ago.
Which was an ace, yep.
Which was an ace. I mean, it's an ace, but it's still an albatross. It's an ace on a par four. There was Nico's at USDGC. Yeah, we see them about, and then I think 2 years before that, it's about every 2 years we see an albatross on tour, like at a major or elite series. So clearly much rarer than a hole-in-one.
Yeah.
Which we see weekly.
Tom out on the board says, Dan Schlitter got an ace on hole 7 at Northwoods. So, yeah, certainly we're throwing that in there as well. So, number of aces throughout the weekend, but Holland Hanley's albatross, very, very cool. So, congrats to her. Worth a separate note for sure.
It is. Definitely a separate note. Let's talk about the big controversy on the weekend.
Which one?
The not-so-falling putt. From Paige Pierce.
Let me check my video.
trust me, I think everybody has seen it. We showed it a lot of times on the broadcast. The story behind the story is Paige Pierce obviously was lining up for her putt. She threw her putt and then her left hand, she didn't fall forward exactly. She kind of maintained balance, but then used her left hand subtly and kind of pushed herself back. Kind of one fluid motion. It never once looked like she lost her balance, but she kind of had her hand there and pushed it back. Now the tree was like literally lined up exactly with her mini. The back of the tree closest to her was behind her lie. The front of the tree, it looked like, was in front of her lie. Her mini was like right lined up with that tree. Now, again, this is what I'm seeing from the camera angles we have. And as we know, never, never trust cameras for distance, for angle, for anything. It's why they can't be used in rule calling. They lie. They clearly show things that are skewed. Just you can't
add weight.
They add so much weight to us. you just can't trust them. But I trust my eyes and what I saw. I'm going to go based on the video evidence I saw. And Paige Pierce called a falling putt. And she also kind of bumped her mini with her foot, which it was hard to tell if she actually hit the mini with her foot or a stick that maybe popped the mini up. She wasn't talking about that as far as I was under the impression. She immediately called herself on a falling putt. But as per PDGA rules, which are now bad in my opinion, you cannot call yourself on a falling putt. It has to be second. You can call yourself, but it has to be seconded.
Yeah.
And nobody saw. And again, I don't blame her competitors because it was subtle. And from where they were standing, it was hard to see her hand kind of brace herself against the tree. And if I'm a competitor, I'm probably watching feet or balance. Like, oh, did she fall forward? No, she didn't. Her feet didn't go past the mini. I didn't see a falling putt if I were her competitor. So not seeing that, I can completely understand. I don't blame her competitors at all. They get to the next hole. There's discussion about it. Because you can't call yourself on a second, at some point, Paige more or less says, hey, guys, I want to take the penalty stroke because I don't want to be called a cheater. Because everybody in the world sees it. And I think she was probably having some sort of flashbacks to Utah Worlds when she missed the Mando over and nobody called it. Because sure. Nobody could see it from where they were. It was a funny angle. She probably didn't see it. Nobody else there saw it. But the cameras clearly showed it. It went over by a few inches. Jeff Spring steps in and says, okay, fine, I'll second the call. Which at that point, for me, in the control room, I immediately went, can he do that? Can he do it that late? Can he do it when he admitted he didn't see it? The falling putt. He obviously saw the putt, but he couldn't verify that it was an actual falling putt. At that point, then she gets the penalty stroke. It's put on her card. A couple holes later, Jeff, they're continuing to talk about it throughout the round. Jeff is talking to the official as far as what exactly happened. At some point, they determine that that it was not the correct call for a falling putt because because the tree was technically behind her lie. And so they remove the stroke. Is this kind of, am I
sure.
right yep. in all okay. of this so far? And that's kind of that. That's the story. Now, the issue I take with it, a couple of things, and I think if you asked him, Jeff would probably regret seconding it in the first place based on some of, because at some point something came out that it was, I think a statement was released saying that Jeff had temporarily seconded it.
Sure.
And then withdrew the seconding later, which I'd never heard of. I don't really know if you can do that officially, but there's a lot of the rule book I don't know. So maybe that's true. Maybe whatever. Because I think that sets a bad precedent in general, being able to withdraw a second later in the round for any reason. If imagine someone seconds something, a falling putt on hole 3, you get towards hole 17, it gets really tight. I'm going to withdraw that second, and then you lose that stroke. That stroke comes back to you, like to help maybe help
a
friend.
There was a deeper conversation with talking to the
there. I'm sure there was
the tournament official in talking to him as to
correct
what the call would be, and then the tournament official can overrule. Or hear an appeal or overrule what's being called out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the tournament official had stepped in, who is not Nate, by the way, in case anyone's asking. It is someone else. And so the tournament official had then overruled it, which he had then essentially, and then Paige was, and you probably saw her on camera, thinking or motioning as if she had fallen behind her or to the side. And I think Paige was even a little confused as to what constitutes a falling putt.
Oh, for sure. I believe
and so,
she was wrong. She was in the wrong to so call herself for a falling
putt. It's kind of an interesting precedent overall of, I mean, there's so many other bigger questions that come as a result of this. A, should you be able to call yourself on a stance violation?
Yes. If it involves a, personally, in my opinion, if it involves an immediate stroke, I believe you should be able to. Because it used to be that you couldn't do it because you could then re-putt without a penalty on the first time. So if you fell forward purposefully, so to speak, if you missed your putt, then fell forward, you could retake that putt. Now it's an immediate penalty stroke. I believe that the rules should be reverted back to where you can call yourself at any point on a stroke violation, because there's no advantage you take to calling yourself when you get an immediate penalty stroke.
Yeah.
There's just none. Like, if I'm in the bushes and no one can kind of hardly see me and I throw a putt and fall forward, if I'm like inside 30 feet and this happened 33 feet and I do that, but no one can kind of see it, I should be able to walk out of that bush and go, hey guys, I fell forward on that. Give me the penalty. I'll take the penalty stroke. I think that should be allowed personally now that the rules are changed. I agreed with the rules before. I agreed with the rules then with the change. But now that we've changed them again, I think that they should be reverted back to the original change. That made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that poses, of course, one of the first and foremost questions is, like you just said, anything that results in an immediate penalty for yourself, should you have to get a second on it? And then also, it does bring up just, I think, an over a bigger question of like, if a rule or ruling is made on the course that is deemed appropriate at the time by either one or more players on the course, but then is later then wants to be either retracted or wiped off or appealed, like just making it crystal clear what those options and procedures really are.
Oh yeah.
I mean, because let's put it this way. If you, I think about so many scenarios of you and someone else on your card think something is one way, it gets marked and played that way. If it's not under some type of
provisional,
provision or something of that nature, and then it's turned in, and then you can't come back the next day and be like, oh, well, actually, I mean, it sets itself up for so much more confusion.
I'm just curious how the official that made this call, what was discussed with him to make the call, because unless the official was on site, there's. Did they say, oh, yeah, the page braced herself on a tree that was behind her lie? Like, was that told to him? Because if that's the case, then cool. I mean, I don't think the official watched the video.
No, he did not.
Yeah.
No.
So how was that information relayed to them? Because I don't know if any of them on the card realized, I didn't realize the rule that if the tree is behind your lie, you can brace yourself on it. I didn't know that. I thought you could not support yourself with anything other than the ground. You couldn't grab a tree or anything, but that's only if it's in front of your lie. And on top of that, it was interesting because, like I said, the tree encompassed her lie. It was behind it and in front of it. So it kind of comes down to that old myth rule where, you know, hey, the tree.
Benefit of the doubt?
No. The tree's on the bank of the river and the branch rolls over the river, but I hit the branch, so the branch is really in bounds. That whole old wives' tale, and it's like, no, you were out of bounds. So I didn't understand personally that because the tree portion of her was closest that she was in. So I was completely unaware of how the rule was officially run, which is, I'm glad I'm not an official.
Yeah, it was a very interesting just unfolding, and I think it's an eye-opener. And clearly, this has such significant implications. I mean, here Paige is trying to give herself a penalty stroke because that's what she felt like was the right and correct application of the rules. And then later, they're having a more detailed conversation and then realizing, wait, I was either misinterpreting or misapplying this rule, and let's get it straightened out now. And of course, they wanted to do it then on, I think it was 15, the second time. And the issue happened on 11.
Correct.
And I don't remember what hole. Maybe it was 13. I don't remember. But they wanted to get it figured out just in case this thing came down to a stroke or two difference on the final hole. Now, as we determined with Paige relative to Missy, that didn't matter.
Missy squished her.
But you clearly don't want this lingering because they could be both staring at, approach shots on the tee of 18.
Wondering.
Unknowing how this might get called later. I think the other lesson that was definitely learned here was there was almost this odd pressure of, well, let's make a call and worry about it later when it was first discussed on the tee of 12 or right after 11. It happened on 11. And I think in hindsight, there should have been a longer, lengthier discussion, especially considering they're the last group of the day. But I think everyone feels like, wait, we should have nailed this the very first time rather than going to the next tee, having the conversation, and then almost they didn't table it by any means, but they made a decision that might have been a little in haste. I think that was the big takeaway.
I think there was just, I mean, clearly there was pressure. And let me just say this. The score ended up as the right score. What happened was correct in the long run. But at the end of the round, what Paige got what she, quote unquote, deserved to get, the score that she earned. I just think there was a lot of pressure from Paige for someone to make that call because she had even kind of hinted at a courtesy violation for her card mates for not watching.
Yeah.
And but was... like, and again, I don't think it would have ever come to that, but
no, but you know, she, in light of her wanting the correct application mm-hmm. and maybe a little bit of frustration, that's when you heard her utter something along the lines of, well, maybe I should give you guys all a warning for not watching me.
But that's just it. Like, as when I said, and I think that was a little hasty on Paige's part. I think she was a little frustrated.
Yeah, she was.
Clearly,
she
and
was
I can understand.
Being a little hyperbolic, I think.
Because of the past history of things that have people have said about her, whether it's, you know, that call from Utah Worlds, or I know people have, you know, freeze framed her jump putts and things like that. So there's a history of this with internet people.
Either way.
Yeah, I don't have. I hope this changes or clears up, or again, points to something with the rules that we can fix. I think that is a good, and I don't blame her. Like I said, from Paige's perspective, I don't blame her competitors, man. It was hard to see. It was hard to see her balance on that tree, push herself off slightly with her left hand. It almost didn't even look like, I didn't notice she did it on the first putt. I had to go back when we watched it in a replay and see that, yes, it was her left hand just about waist high that kind of touched the tree.
Yeah.
You couldn't even tell if she pushed herself back from it or if it just rested there. So I don't blame, I'm the first, not the first, but I'm one of the people that are like, yeah, you should definitely as a competitor be watching your players, watching other players and what they're doing and what they're throwing and this and that. You could have watched her twice or three times and not seen that. So yeah. I don't blame the competitors.
It is tough. And, you know, I know we always beat this horse of, you know, that's why we need
Marshalls
on every single hole.
Some guy named
Marshall. Every single shot, every single hole. In this case, Jeff Jacquois had said, he's like, I had two cameramen directly in front of me. I didn't see what she was referencing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying like, oh, well, you know, everybody's always going to be blocked. Of course, they want to be seeing the action. But there's going to be times where somebody moves into place. Next thing you know, whether it's a cameraman or a spotter or a scorekeeper or a caddy. Yeah, you might not be in the perfect position, or even just like as a camera person, I think about like, I would have loved to have moved about 6 inches or 12 inches from where I was mm-hmm. To get the shot that I was getting. But Paige was set up and ready to go at that point. I'm like, well, I'm not moving. So this is the shot I get. So it's there's going to be a human element no matter to what we're doing out there. Clearly, we want to always get the right and the best correct calls, but you could put two marshals on every single hole, and I'm sure we're still going to have oddities that come up from time to time. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Well, let's quickly, we can jump off of all of Ledgestone. Congrats to all of the players. You know, I think when it was all said and done,
congrats to the TD. Congrats to,
yeah, you know, 2,200 ish competitors.
Yeah, $150,000 raised for St. Jude.
Raised and then split among a number of charities.
Correct.
St. Jude being one of them. Paul McBeth Foundation being one of them. I believe Edge was also a recipient in some capacity. I don't know the exact division of how they were all split. I don't care if one of them got $149,000 and the other two each got $500. I don't personally care. I don't know the details. Nonetheless, I think Nate and the event, if I recall, has now, prior to this week, had already given a cumulative total of something like $320,000 to St. Jude. So I'm guessing he didn't say, oh, here's $900 this year. So I don't know how it got divided up. It really doesn't matter. I saw somebody almost hinting at some negativity around worrying about the split and around worrying about the $150,000 and the various, you know, how equitable the distribution was or wasn't. I'm not going to say go jump in a lake, but What a problem for us to be arguing about on the internet, right? Well, where's that $150,000 going among those three nonprofit charities when
I want the receipts.
99% of tournaments, 99.9% of tournaments don't have a total budget of $150,000, and the Ledgestone crew this year donated $150,000 just to charities. I said this to Nate's mom.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
No, we were talking. She genuinely had asked as we were kind of packing some things up on Sunday. And she's like, you know, it's really cool, this and that. And I said, it's amazing. I said, I worry, Nate, with what the Ledgestone event has done in this $320,000 or now almost $500,000 total. I worry it almost that he's desensitized us, because I think about a five or a ten or a $50,000 check going to any organizations and how insane that is for normal disc golf. Mm-hmm. And now for him and the event to be giving multiple years worth that are totaling over six figures or totaling six figures, I think he's almost desensitized people. Like,
correct. No,
this is not normal, people. I can't scream this loud enough. This is not normal.
That we saw that, it was a big deal. Oh my God, look how much money he's donating to charity. The second year, it was like, oh, cool, he's got another big check. This year, I felt like it was hardly mentioned. We cut in, literally, we watched it in picture. A bunch of cute kids, a check being handed to somebody while commercials were playing. That's how desensitized we are to it. And whether that's our fault, the media's fault for not pumping that up more, whether it's Nate's fault for not promoting it more, whether it's just everybody's fault for not caring enough. I don't know where the blame is supposed to be thrown. If there should be any blame, I'm going to say this. Should we be celebrating that? I think, of course, it's always great to. But in general, like, cool that these are big accomplishments. This is great. I it's unfortunate for Nate, but this has now become old hat for him. It's like, cool. Yeah. Nate is donating another big check to a bunch of needy kids.
I'll just say, I absolutely will just say it's insane. I think about years and years of running small to medium sized tournaments. And if I added up 5 or 8 or 10 years of hosting tournaments, my entire event operating budget has not equaled $150,000. So to know that that is entirely a charitable donation from one single year is absolutely just, it's just incredible. So I did want to get that in there.
Huge shout out to Nate.
Yeah. And everyone from the Ledgestone crew, you know, and that includes the local St. Jude hospital that sends people over to help staff some of the event, to then help take donations and to help run raffles and to do those things. And then they're there in a number of they're not just there to show up and collect a check, although that's, you know, the warm and fuzzies. They're also there doing a number of other things throughout the week. So just crazy. I guess maybe another bigger question for another day is, you know, 11, 9 or 11 or 15 courses and 2,200 people. Is that just too much of a, I don't want to say carnival. Is that just too much of an affair and a undertaking in the first place? But I think that's a longer story for another day. So, and then also maybe in within regular news, and maybe it's after show worthy as well, but, just a couple hours ago, Paul McBeth throwing out a first pitch at the Chicago White Sox game tonight. Of course, we saw that just a few weeks ago.
Have you seen the pitch?
Yes, it was.
I was gonna say, first of all, I was gonna have you guess. Did he get it to the catcher? Mm. Now, Paul is a former
standout
high school baseball player, I believe.
Yes.
But usually they don't let you take the mound. So sometimes, did the catcher catch it? Unlike Ricky's.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me the details, Terry.
Oh, I think it would be cool for us to even show it at some point, but
I'd have to find.
Yeah, it was. So he had run out to the mound, and this is, I think, from maybe Hannah's perspective, but he ran out to the mound and threw the pitch, threw what looked to be a really solid pitch from what I could see of the catcher, he indicated as if it was a strike. I don't know if he just does that for everybody. But he goes out there, throws the pitch, and then shortly up on the jumbo screen is a 20 or 30 second Paul Macbeth disc golf montage.
Oh, he nailed it. He went straight down home plate.
Yeah, it was a solid looking pitch. And then, like I said, on the Jumbotron, they show a montage of various Paul Macbeth shots and ends with
make moves.
So, you know, and then immediately I started thinking, well, is there any branding or advertising that, you know, that's why it was relatively, I don't want to say it wasn't bland. It was a well put together, like, couple of shots, but there was no major pro tour or discraft. Like, you got to wonder if there's just some other rights or branding or something that
I don't know, but it was limited. I'd be willing to bet that this had a lot to do with Dylan Cease.
You think?
Yeah.
Who is
who is a pitcher. Well, I'm explaining it for the listeners.
Okay.
Who is a pitcher for the White Sox, a friend of Paul Macbeth, who came to the Celebrity Pro event last year, did not make it this year due to the timing, and is a very avid disc golfer, and a very good one at that, nonetheless. So, and honestly, right now, probably the best pitcher in the major leagues, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, so, and as you were just saying, Ricky Wysocki over at the Cincinnati Reds game a few weeks ago, just before the Idlewild, also had thrown out a first pitch. So kind of cool to see our top level athletes out there getting this really cool honor to be able to do.
Other disc golfers in the news, so to speak. Ricky Wysocki got a shout out on the Pat McAfee show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of the Pat McAfee show in general.
Okay. What is it like for the listeners?
I mean,
how would you describe, what's the,
it feels like, I mean, it's an interview / call in show. Radio / internet based, very much it feels very much of the right now internet, like how it's produced and things like that. Pat McAfee does a lot of, I just don't like his personality, I think.
Oh.
Okay. Like I think the show was fine. Oh, he has great. Good interviews.
Smashbox isn't getting any shout-outs anytime soon.
Aaron Rodgers comes on all the time because I think he's friends with Pat McAfee. And he gets all sorts of great interviews, and he's very knowledgeable. I just don't like just the style. Just it doesn't suit me. Just doesn't suit me. So, but either way, somebody called in and more or less disc golf came up right away. And the guy who talked about it, a little off in some of his facts, as he had said, he's like, yeah, I think Paul Macbeth is like a 6-time world champ and Ricky's 3-time. And I'm like, nope, you missed them both, buddy.
More than they are. So that's good. At least he's not undercutting.
He's not shortchanging. And Pat McAfee just kept asking, like, well, what's your rating? And as our ratings are, it's hard to describe to someone who doesn't understand how ratings are. Like,
sure.
I'm because when the guy's like, I'm like a 900 rated player. And Pat McAfee's like, 900. And it's like, wow, that's big. And it didn't really seem to flow through when it was like, well, no, the best guys are like 1,050 and 1,040, and where the difference between 900 and, you know, because if you go 0 to 900, that's a huge gap, but 900 to 1,050, that's only 150 points. When really,
that's the
world of difference. So I think our rating system is very difficult to explain to people. Either way, a few shout outs of some disc golfers' names as they brought up a ranking list. And of course, Ricky was at the top of it. There was a talk about Ricky being from Ohio, and they scrolled through and mentioned some other names, which was kind of cool. So that is other disc golfers in the news.
Okay. I want to read a few quick, just hot off the presses from our friend Dinko over in Varaždin, Croatia. He says, and I knew of this going down, but I'm going to just read exactly what he sent me, which is the WFDF, World Flying Disc Federation, World Team Event, Team Disc Golf Championship starts today in Varaždin, Croatia. Beautiful town. I've been there. Competing national teams are Australia, Canada, Colombia, USA, and 21 European nations. Each team consists of 6 to 12 players, so this is one of the largest meetups of disc golfers from all over the world. A great experience for all competitors. USA represented by Sabrina Williams, Dana Litt, Finney Buchanan, Billy Lund, They let him? They let him out of the country? Billy. Chris Villa and Ervilla and Kevin Gleason, who just celebrated his birthday, I believe, yesterday. Support your team and find out some lovely photos on the event Parade of Nations at, and then they put a link out there, which I'll share as well. Round one matches start today, and the USA is in Pool D with Austria, Croatia, Colombia, Hungary, and Switzerland. Top four teams from all four pools move to the knockout second stage, and new world champions, Finland is reigning champion, will be announced on Saturday. So
listen, boys and girls, cool. You don't win this, don't come home. I'm just saying.
Yes. I'm gonna put that in our chat.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's pretty cool.
I'm just gonna take a guess. Never seen the movie. Is that Good Morning Vietnam with Robin Williams? Is that a reference?
No, it's not a reference to anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought there was some reference there.
No, I mean maybe it isn't. I subtly
you just stole it.
I stole it and I don't realize it. But yeah, no, it's just a joke. If you don't win, don't come home. Mm. Other PDGA news.
Wait, that's from Armageddon, isn't it?
Well, they weren't coming home if they didn't win. PDGA announces several annual awards is the headline. The Volunteer of the Year, Mark Stevens. Maybe it's Stephens, but I'm pretty sure it's Stevens.
Stevens, who we just saw at D-Glow a few weeks ago.
Correct. The Brent Hambrick Tournament Director of the Year, Tim Barr. Congratulations. The 2021 Bob West Sportsman Award, Paul Ulibarri. Congratulations, Paul. Those are your three awards that were handed out today. So congratulations to all three of your winners.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it earlier in the day, but we should have a running weekly update on our both Rookie of the Year and Player of the Year candidates and those runnings. I know that Emily Beach, last time I had looked, was way out as a front runner.
She's locked up. She can't
lose. In the FPO Rookie of the Year.
Unless she literally maybe didn't show up and somebody else came back, some other rookie won a few events, I don't believe Emily Beach can lose it. I think she's officially, statistically locked it up is what I heard.
Well, geez.
So sorry, other ladies.
Okay. Either way, maybe that's a reoccurring theme that we can have moving forward, is giving you some of those updates as the year already is into August. Wow, that feels crazy in itself. All right, John, do we have anything else for this regular show?
I don't believe we do, Terry Miller.
Are we going any more off the rails?
Off
Ray
the rails.
Out there.
We've been pretty on point today, Terry.
Ray out there says he's got topics. He's been scouring scurrying all over the internet to give us topics that apparently need more discussing. So, Ray, I hope you've got them, and I hope that we can talk about them in the after show as you slowly feed them to us, because we don't do real work here.
No, that's what we rely on Ray for.
But doing real work was Missy Gannon this weekend, along with the Ledgestone crew. So congratulations to anyone and everyone involved on every level. I think of big-time listeners and Hall of Famer Tom McManus, who was out there hustling around at the Eureka course. I think it was like something like more than 200 volunteers and 85 staff members, or upwards of 85 staff members, to pull off this event. So just can't say it enough. Take a deep breath, relax, enjoy whatever it is you need to do to simmer down after this incredible weekend to all of you. Congrats. Three-time champion now in Ricky Wysocki, and also congrats, of course, to Missy Gannon. This has been Podcast 416. That's Johnny V. I'm Terry Miller, the Disc Golf Guy. We're going to stand down for just a few moments to take a quick break. We'll be back with the after show for some more disc golf and non-disc golf-related topics. We'll see you then when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.